Yeah, okay.
My name is Aaron Rekefit, and I'm a third generation New Yorker. My parents were born in Harlem, grew up in the Bronx, got on a 36 bus and traveled for about 18, 20 minutes. I was in Washington Heights, walked a 3-minute walk, I would say, opened the door to room 102 and the big, beautiful building that houses the yeshiva, the building that was originally built in 1928. It opened in Hanukkah of 1928. And I was privileged to study many years with the Rav. Obviously, I can do very little within the context of the time allotted to me, considering that I gave 22 years of Sheir among the Rav in Gris Kolel in my Monday class. My Sunday class is dedicated to Shas Peskin, Shelet and Tshuva. If anything interests you about the Rav, you can follow up, either going on Wine Torah and picking up Rekefet, or out of my 8 published books now, two of the books, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, 2 volumes, The World of Material. Now, Yeshiva asked me to come in. It's not easy for me to be here. You're used to this cold weather. I'm living in Israel 49 years. For us, it's, my wife and I, it's very cold. And we have a big family back home, and I'm teaching. I have wonderful students. But for the memory of the Rav, I have to do what I have to do. I'm giving 10 different lectures here. This is the 7th out of the 10 lectures. Those that I'm giving during the week on YU Torah, so like the lecture you heard and Sunday's lecture on last Wednesday, you can pick up. The lecture I want to deal with today is the Rav in the Western world. It's a very timely topic because we struggle with these problems. In my youth, Lakewood Yeshiva opened, and Rabbi Aaron Cutler, the great Kletz Goresh Yeshiva, who was saved in 41, came to America, opened Lakewood after all the Hatzalah work was ended after 42. There was not much you can do. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were being killed weekly, and there was nothing we could do, nothing the American government wanted to do. You all know the story. So then he opened Lakewood, and Lakewood was a big attraction. And after high school, I desperately wanted to learn in Lakewood. I had gone there for months during the fourth year in high school. And my parents intervened, and I made a deal with my mother that I would give Yeshiva College a try for 1 year, and if I don't like it, then I can go back to Lakewood and no one will have a complaint to me. Well, I went to Yeshiva College, and as they say, the rest is history. In my scholarly memoir, which was published by the OU, from Washington Avenue to Washington Street, you can read about this and see what Lakewood was and what Yeshiva College was. But there was one thing about Lakewood that goes on to a certain degree until today, to withdraw from the big world around us. If you ask if you had asked Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Rebbe, is it permissible to go to college, to go to university, to be part of the great world around us? The answer you would get was absolutely not. The more the Jew can ghettoize, the better is his Judaism. Beautiful. So thank you. The more the Jew can ghettoize, the better is his Judaism. In Eretz Yisrael, as you know, we have a major conflict that goes on until today. Do we stay in the ghetto or do we come out of the ghetto? The Rav 100% absolutely felt that a Jew had to come out of the ghetto and live in the big world. The Rav constantly referred to Avraham Avinu when he dealt with the B'nai Chet and tried to buy Morat HaMachpelah. So you all know what Avraham Avinu says, Ger v'tosha v'nochi machem. And the Rav said, we live in two worlds. We have to live in two worlds. It's the destiny of the Jew to live in two worlds. On one hand, we're a ger. We're different than everybody else. We have a different lifestyle. Our Shabbat, our kashrut, our sexual behavior, totally different, right or wrong. I trust that good Jews don't engage in locker room talk, if I can refer to the President of the United States on that level, or differently, I hope that good Jews are not involved in being accused in the Me Too generation. So we're different than the rest of the world. Ger, on the other hand, Toshav, we're part of the rest of the world. If my grandchildren find a cure for cancer in their research, everyone in the world is going to rejoice. Jew, not Jew, right or wrong. If we invent a new type of car that can drive by itself, as they're in Israel, when they have Google is now trying out some cars that don't have humans driving them. If we can invent that, imagine you get into a car. I was just lecturing in Florida. Was in a student's home, and he says, Mr. Google, I'm looking at, within 1 minute, Google is answering. To me, it's crazy, my generation. But imagine you can go into a car and tell the car, I want to get to Stern College, take me the quickest way, give me the address, you sit back and relax, and you're at Stern College. All right, that's an achievement. As a toshav, it doesn't affect our Judaism, but gev a toshav and achi imachem. Now, this becomes very important. Because at times the challenges of the outside world, and in our case it's the Western world, it's not the Greek world we're living in, not the Latin world we're living in, not the Islamic world we're living in, not the Christian world we're living in, but the world around us is the great Western civilization. At times there's conflict, and you have to know what you can accept and what you must reject. And here, the Rav once gave a talk in Moriah on Broadway in 76th Street, I believe it was. It was a shul built around the Rav that he should give a shiur there every Tuesday night, Moriah. And he gave a talk on the Pasha Vayechi at the end of Breshit, where they tell Yosef, your father is sick, Hinei Avicha Choleh, and he rushes with his two sons, Ephraim and Menashe, to visit the father, and Yaakov Avinu says, "Mi elo lech, who are these kids? I don't recognize them. Tell me, is there a grandfather that will not recognize his own grandchildren? And even if your vision is down, who else could Yosef HaTzadik be with, if not Ephraim and Menashe?" So the Rebbe said so beautifully, I later found it in the Malbim as well, that every time Ephraim Menashe came to visit their grandfather, they had time to change their clothes. They worked in the court of Paro. They worked in the Western world. They had to dress like Egyptians. When they visited to visit their grandfather, they put on their bekesher, their shtreimel, whatever the Jewish clothes was. This time, Hinei Avicha Choleh, they had no time to change that or run. Their grandfather is dying. Ugh. They look like Goyim. Who are these kids? And Yosef HaTzadik answers so beautifully, Banayim, they're my children, whom God blessed me with here in this land. They have to live with dual culture. And that's why Yaakov Avinu blessed them, V'yikarei v'hem shmi v'shem abotai Avraham v'yitzchak, v'yidgu l'rov b'kerev ha'aretz. Yes, they should continue the traditions. They're the children of Avraham and Yitzchak. But they should succeed in the midst of the land, the culture, the world in which they find themselves. And this is why, I'll go one step further, Moriah Rebbe said, the Rebbe said, Friday night, my wife and I only raised daughters. God has a sense of humor. Don't ask what we have on the third and fourth generation. We barely see a girl. That's all I can tell you. I have endless minyanim of grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Rabbi Shlomo has a sense of humor. But we raised only daughters. New one, I blessed my daughters until today. Yisimet Elokim, Yisara Rivka Rachaleah. That makes sense. Our matriarchs, you bless a boy, well, not Avram, not Yitzchak, not Simcha Bini, Kefraim Chumanasha. Why? What happened to the patriarchs? But you see what we're saying to that kid. We never know where you're going to grow up, where life will take you. No matter where you should be, no matter how alien the culture to Judaism is, you should thrive and remain loyal Jewish children like Ephraim and Menashe. It's a good word from the Rav. So you see, what the Rav taught us is we have to draw a line. And in the 80 years that God has privileged me to live, out of which 59 I've been teaching Torah, I've never worked a day in my life. Bear that in mind. I've been teaching Torah since I graduated Yeshiva College. In those days there was no kollel. You wanted, I had a girlfriend, I wanted to get married. So I Talmud Torah, 59, then Newark, New Jersey, then afterwards the Bronx, Concourse Center, then the Rabbinate, Talmud Torah, then Rosh Yeshiva, YU, etc., etc. So look at Korach. Korach, common sense, what did he say to Moshe? Talit shekulo tchelet, chayevet betzitzet, right? You know the Chazal. It's a medrash as well. Rashi quotes it. Bayit malei svarim. Do you need a mezuzah? He said, if you have an empty house, one mezuzah takes care of it. If the house is filled with scrolls, why do you need a mezuzah? Tzitzit. If the talis is white, then one strand of blue takes care of it. If the talis is blue, why do you need tzitzit? Common sense. Kal v'chomer, fortiori in English, if anyone knows some Sino English. But that's not Judaism. We have to follow the halacha, we have to follow our own system. At times it doesn't make sense to the Western mind. At times it appears a little odd. Chok, what do Chazal say about Kukim? The nations of the world laugh at us. What's wrong with eating chaza? I'll slaughter the animal in Columbia Presbyterian Hospital under sanitary conditions. We still can't eat chaza. What's wrong with seafood? You follow? You must keep the boundary clear. All right, let me get down to work now. With that introduction, let me take some of the major issues we're facing today. And since I'm in Stern College, and some of you know I taught women for 31 years, I taught over 10,000 different women. I taught in the Israeli Michalah, the Universal Michalah, I'll call it, Machon Gold, and I was on the founding faculty of Midrashit Moriah. About 20 years ago, I just pulled into the kollel because you grow older and you want to teach yourself. In the kollel, I don't have to teach any curriculum. I teach myself. I never repeat a lecture. I want to know kollel Torah kula. By the time I meet the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'll never get there, but no one can accuse me of not trying. So the issue of feminism, all my students, the rabbis, all the questions I've gotten, and how do we deal with it? What was the rub? What was his attitude? So I want to tell you a number of stories that only I can tell you. That happened to me, and you'll get a feeling who the rub was. His respect for women was second to none. Believe it or not, when I arrived here about 45 minutes ago, So this young lady who greeted me, Rachel Cement, took me, I believe it was the Beis Medrash, and I met my chavruta of ancient times sitting there. You know him as Harav Yosef Blau, I know him as Jerry. Believe it or not, at that time, in the Beis Medrash, it was, Rabbi Blau will tell you, he knows him too, Raphael Weinberg. He's in Haifa, came in Aliyah, maybe a year or two after we did. So he's in Israel a long time. I haven't seen him in a while. So Ray Weinberg and I were sitting in the basement. It had to be Hanukkah time when we had school in the morning and had the afternoon off. And we were high school kids. But we all knew who the Rav was. And the Rav, who would come in from Boston and stay across the street in his mother's apartment on Amsterdam Avenue, comes into the Beis Medrash. There's very few kids there. There was no school at the time. We were just there learning on our own. And he comes over to us and relive it. Boys, can you do me a favor? And we knew who he was. We jump up, of course, Rabbi Soloveitchik. And we go out to the hallway, and there's his mother. I had the skut of meeting and helping Rebbetzin Pesha Feinstein Soloveitchik. She was a first cousin to Reb Moshe Feinstein. She was the daughter of Reb Elia Feinstein, Pruzhana Rav. Could you walk my mother to the Associated? It was on Audubon and 186th. Doesn't exist anymore. And carried back the packages. It was a food store, a supermarket. So Ray and I walk her, and the Rebbetzin buys about 10 boxes of matzah, Hanukkah time. And we say to her, and by that time we had to break our teeth, but we spoke Yiddish. You got to remember, I didn't know a word of English in seventh grade in Solanta Elementary School. My teachers didn't speak a word of English. They were all Shanghai survivors. And I didn't speak a word of Yiddish, but by then we knew Yiddish, at least basic Yiddish. And we say to Rebbetzin, "Siz Chanukah, was darf man so viel matzah?" Rebbetzin, it's Chanukah time. Why do you need so much matzah? And she tells us about Chadash. Do you understand what I'm saying? You can't eat from the new grain until after Korban HaOmer, right or wrong, first day Chol HaMoed Pesach. Now, does that apply outside of Israel? It seems it does. Most Rishonim say it does. The Rav's mother was Machmira. He had to carry back, I carried five, Ray carried five, 10 boxes of matzah, which went in to her home to last until Pesach. You all know, her youngest son, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik from Shabbat, was Makpid. He introduced bakeries Yashan, but I can never forget they only used grain that was from the last year. Only after Pesach did they bake with the new grain in the United States. And this we have no problem because there's really no winter harvest of grain. Whatever grain we harvest in Israel is sent to Italy, it's turned into spaghetti. It's very hard. And we get our flour. It comes in from overseas. It's not from the Israeli crop. So we don't have a problem in Israel, but in America, if you're Makpid, you have to look for the Chadash sign. There are Mekilim. I don't want to scare you. There are Mekilim, but that's not the majority viewpoint, but you can be Samachanet. The Rav was Samachanet in Boston. So right away, I met the Rav's mother. I met the Rav's wife under different circumstances. And this story, of course, many people quote it. Some young ladies hear the story, they break into tears. Why was he so harsh? It appears in the documentary on the Rav, which I brought into the world, The Lonely Man of Faith. But this was, the Rav in the classroom was very tough from the 40s into the 50s. He had never gone to a yeshiva, and evidently his concept was to get the most out of the students, squeeze them till they produce genius. And here I am, we've petitioned the yeshiva, we want to share with the Rav. We were college kids. He was only teaching postgraduate. So finally they agreed, they're going to give us a share with the Rav. Fine. Go into the share, and he gives the share. And a week later he asks, What did I say last week? And he calls on you. Now watch, he writes down three different grades. If you don't raise your hand, lo yada. No. If you raised your hand and you could talk with him to his satisfaction, that was yada. If you raised your hand and it was not to his satisfaction, he wrote down shakran. Liar. So could you imagine? We kids were frightened out of our wits. And we held the meeting after class. The word of honor. You can read it in Washington. Certainly I don't tell fibs when I write. Maybe, I don't know, in New York, I don't know. But when I write, you can depend upon honesty. So after class, we held the meeting. We said, we're not going to survive this. So we said, what do we do? So one kid, he lives in Be'er Sheva, one Pras Yisrael, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, considered him the greatest Talmud the Rav ever had. You probably never heard the name. He's a genius in Rambam, etc. But he's lived in Israel also almost as long as we have. Jerry Blitzstein, Yaakov Blitzstein. He was a classmate of Jerry Blau. They're both from Brooklyn. So Jerry said, his grandfather was a great rabbi, the Mabit. He says, you know what? We'll talk with his wife. So he appointed a committee, went in to talk with his wife. But he said, you know, Rebbetzin, we're young kids yet. It's tension. She said, leave it to me. Leave it to me. A week goes by, he comes back from Boston, and we are frightened stiff. The whole class is sitting there with their heads down. He's taking attendance. The tension, you could feel it in the air. It's like a batter up, the bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, the tie game, the count 3-2. And the Rav finishes attendance, looks at us and says, you're a bunch of crybabies, crybabies. But he never pulled that again. So you see, that little story, what does it tell you? It tells you his great respect for women. His wife, mother. But I have a better story. Here I'm not allowed to say the name. The person who told it to me is a Rosh Yeshiva, and every word accurate, but he said, don't mention the names, but tell the story. The story is beautiful. This happened long after I'm gone, living in Israel. And it's already the 70s, feminism is on the agenda. And this person comes from a Hungarian home, his father's a Talmud Chacham. And every Shabbos after Shul, they make Kiddush. And the father learns with the boys. The girls, out of here, into the kitchen. And this, his sister, particularly bright, going to Barnard, and she started to think, you know what, am I second rate? This is offensive. And she started to question Yiddishkeit. And there was a family wedding. And her brother was a Rosh Yeshiva, was on Sunday, and he was giving shiur in first call. Excuse me, or maybe it was during the week, because the Rav was in New York at the time, so it could have been a Monday or a Tuesday, but there was a family wedding. And he said to his sister, you know what, when you finish Barnard, take the train uptown, meet me at Yeshiva, wait for me in the lobby, and I'll drive you to the wedding. I'll be down at 3 o'clock. The person gets in the elevator. I think the Rav taught on the fifth floor. It's after my time, so that's why I have to say I think. I think he taught on the fifth floor in first. And he gets into the elevator with the Rosh Yeshiva. They both finished their shiur. They come down. And there's this Rosh Yeshiva's sister from Barnard. And he introduces her to the Rav. And now they're walking out together, the Rav, the Rosh Yeshiva, and his sister. And they hit the door. And of course, the Rosh Yeshiva opens the door, the sister stands aside, Rebbe, please. And the Rebbe says, no, 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 ladies first. And he insisted that she walk out first. At that moment, all her questions disappeared. Reading me, see a certain attitude, the Rebbe, women, mother, wife, sister of the Talmud. And I have to say there's a tremendous similarity between what happened in the 70s, both the Rav and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And this is history before your eyes. Women want to be recognized, want to roam, want to feel first rate. I'll talk about the Rebbe first. It's a Hasidic approach that he used, the Rebbe Litvisher approach. So when did the Rebbe begin? 1971-72. Kolein ubat matlika neirat shabbat. He took a mitzvah, which is basically a feminine mitzvah, a feminine display of Torah, of emotion, of minhag, הדלקת נרות, and insisted every girl should light candles from the age of 3 and up. From the age of 12, she can make a bracha, perhaps even before. Beautiful. Took a mitzvah that is basically the woman's prerogative and turned it into widespread mass, all women. More than that, can anyone else tell me what the Rebbe did? How many of you are Hasidic? How many of you know what a fabrengen is? The Yivrit, what's the word they use? Yivrit medubedet, hitva adut. You've heard the word a fabrengen. I don't know of an English word for it. They use fabrengen in English. Hasidish, it's not like a, I'm a litvak. If you want to know me, you have to come to my class. I teach. Beyond that, we can become friends, but it has to begin with Shas Paiskim, Shelet Mitzvah, everything that keeps us alive. Chassidim, the Rebbe speaks, you sing, you dance, vodka, a little lekach, cake, l'chaim. Have you ever seen a fabrengen? Come on, Chabad. Go on YouTube. You can spend the rest of the year watching the Rebbe. There's a world of material. Do you know what the Lubavitch Rebbe did in the 70s? Fabrengen for women only. Check it out. See the pictures. It's unbelievable. The only men in the room were the Rebbe and his gabbai, Rav Chabkov. Outside of those two men, there were no other men in the room. The Rav, you all know Maimonides. From the day Maimonides opened, men and women were equal. I had a student many, long before you were born, Machon Gold, early 70s, from Boston, from a very elegant, important family in the Rav's life. Her grandfather brought the Rav to Boston in 1934. And she was my student in Machon Gold. I finally had to tell her off, Esther. We're good friends until today. She learned Bechavrata with a boy, she learned with this boy, that boy. I said, Esther, you gotta pick one boy. You can't be friends with all of them. Thank God she picked a lovely boy, and she's now their grandparents. But the Rav was very makpid. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, there's a recording of the Rebbe talking with the Belzer Rebbe, word by word, the same thing. That when the Gemara talks about that a woman shouldn't learn Gemara, the Gemara in Sota, the Sugya Yotet, Chafayim, a lot the same, but all right, it's not for now. When the Rav spoke about it, and the Lubavitcher, they both said the same thing. This is a social phenomenon. It depends on the circumstances where the Jewish people find themselves. When you get married at the age of 12, then of course there's no time to learn Gemara. But when you become a PhD and an MD, when I go to my dermatologist, and she happens to be my female student in the last class I taught in Mechlala in 85, she can do anything. She can conquer the world. Why can't she learn Gemara? Not only that, you're challenged. You're not receiving, like the Chafetz Chaim writes, I trust you're familiar with this, in Likutei Torah and Sota, there once was a time you saw a fiddler on the roof, where the older girl he was able to give to her husband, everyone is from, the father delivers her to the husband, v'shalom al Yisrael. Nowadays, who delivers what? The girl's out in the world. She's high school, college, graduate school. She's challenged. The movies, the newspapers, the computer. There's no end to it. Without Shas and Paiskim, how will she survive? On that level, she's no different than the male counterpart. So it's very fascinating. The Rav began in a Litvisha fashion. Not a fabrengen, not singing, not dancing, not a l'chaim. He began in Stern College, 1977, gave the first shiur to women. Do they tell you about it or not? Arve Psachim, right here in Eastern College. All right, let me go a drop further. So you'll ask me, you'll say to me, Rebbe, what about today with all the questions? And I'm well aware of all the questions. So I can't tell you what the Rebbe would say. The Rebbe is not alive. I can only tell you about two students of his, and you'll get your own answer. One student you've all heard of, Gaon B'Yisrael, unfortunately no longer alive, which to me is so hard to live with, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and a guy from Israel who left America 49 years ago, Aaron Rakef. It's very interesting. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's daughter, Esti Rosenfeld, Esti Lichtenstein, I know from the time she was a twinkle in her parents' eyes. You know, what does she do today? Migdal Oz. She heads it up. She founded it. Our eldest daughter, who's studying for a master's at Hebrew U in English literature, and she had just gone through a big lawsuit in her building. Everyone from it went through the Batei Dinim to expand, and one person objected, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Rabbinic Court for appeals. So she was very interested in what she saw, what she learned. And she sees an advertisement, if you are religious, if you are a female religious, know how to learn a Daf Gemara on your own, and have a bachelor's degree, we have an exciting new program for you. And my daughter was the first lady since Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain of Sinai to pass all the exams in Eben Ezer and Choshen Mishpat, and get Hasmachar authorization from the chief rabbinate as the first Tohenet Rabbani in history. Today it's an entire profession. These are women who appear before the rabbinic courts. Of course, in Israel that's not enough. She saw she has to go into the Beit Mishpat occasionally, so later she went to law school and in the bar, Hebrew U graduate, etc. But she has mastered both the Ger and Toshav aspects of jurisprudence of law in the modern state of Israel. So you see, here you have two women, daughters of Rashi Yeshiva, and each one totally involved in the Torah world. When I have a question about something in Choshen Mishpat, procedure, Beit Din, who do you think I ask? I ask my daughter. I quote her in class when I deal with DNA now in Eben Ezra, Mamzeret. I quoted my daughter, and I showed the class what my daughter said to me years ago. Here, a new sefer came out from Rav Avraham Yosef, and he says exactly the same thing. So, but what's most important, the boundary has to be kept. A man is a man, a woman is a woman. There's what a man can do, there's what a woman can do. There's certain things a man can't do, and certain things a woman can't do. And this is the divine system. The Rav always used to say, we learn our tefillah from Chana, right or wrong, the Gemara, everything that we're silent, her lips are moving, but we can't hear her. It's the way we stand Shmon Esrei. Yet we can't count Chana to minyan. And this is what is so important. We have to know what we can accept, what we can't accept, what is the difference. And here I'll tell you something that gave me a lot of nachat. In my children's shul, my son-in-law, my eldest daughter's husband, is president of the shul for many years, runs the shul, as he says, he's also the dishwasher, but the shul stands because of my children. He's very busy during the week. I need not tell you he was in the army 20 years, and after that, don't ask questions. Very busy, but the shul has to stand and thrive. So a woman in the shul who married into an American family, and she became, oh boy, she insisted she wants to speak during davening. So my son-in-law asked me, Abba, what's your opinion? I said, my opinion, speaking during davening? Very simple. Davening has to end, you have to break, go make Kiddush. Come back 20 minutes later and let her speak. Those who want to hear are fine. You want to hear Nechama Leibovitch? I would go out of my way. Nechama, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha. My greatest boast in life is that I knew Nechama Leibovitch very well. We taught door to door. I brought her into the Kollel. It's a fact. All right? But not as part of the davening. All right. The shul actually got involved and held the vote and voted unanimously. They don't want women speaking. They want the traditional service. And that woman left. Her father-in-law left. He goes elsewhere. But the shul, Baruch Hashem, thrives. It's an interview with Esti Lichtenstein in the newspapers. I think it was Reb Aaron's Yahrzeit. Esti Rosenfeld, as you know her. And they asked Esti, what's your father's opinion about a woman speaking during the services? And I couldn't believe my eyes. She says, yeah, I asked my father. He said the minyan should break, go elsewhere. 20 minutes, a half hour later, they can come back and reconvene. And then a woman can speak, but not part of the services. All right, I want to give you a little bit of a flavor of the way some of the Rebbe's Talmidim think. And now I want to solve all problems and give you the Rakefet plan for world salvation. Okay? Baruch Hashem, I have a sense of humor, but maybe in 50 years you'll say, gee, I heard it that morning in Stern, that afternoon in Stern. We can't put Rabbi Willick, you know, said, Halavai, we wouldn't teach women Gemara. I need not tell you how much anti-Rabbi Willick talk there was. And I explained to my students, what he's trying to say is it would be a lot easier world if we didn't have the feminist issues. But we can't turn back the clock. It's a reality. I barely know what a computer's about. My great-grandchildren play with a computer from the age of two as if it's a baby bottle. You understand? It's a different world. We have to live with it. Baruch Hashem. Torah is eternal. But now we come to the problem, women rabbis. And I would tell you the following. Number one, the Rabbinical Council of America has to issue an Isur HaCherem that Rabbanim are not allowed to sit and advise women on a one-to-one basis. Women getting divorced, women with spiritual problems. Need I give you a list of rabbis whom I know and what happened as a result of intimacy between a rabbi and a woman, beginning on a very nice level, but we're all humans, men, women. It's a world that God created. If we didn't have that world, none of us would be sitting here. Nu, the Medrash Rabbah, Breishit, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Yoima. Why marry? Stranger. Why get involved with a man, an idiot? Smarter than him, you understand? The woman is smarter than him. We need a payroll, but thank God we have to get married. A man, why should I get involved with a strange woman, spend money on her, have kids, spend a fortune, send them to Stern College, send them to Israel? Wow, what's going on here? No man to woman. We now have two types of spiritual leadership. Kevin has a copyright on this. But I give it to the world, chinam, ein kesef. This young lady's father is a dear student of mine, so she understands me. RA and SA, rabbinic advisor, spiritual advisor. And every shul that has the ability, you have a rabbinic advisor, that's the rabbi, deals with rabbinical questions, can handle eidut l'kiyum davar, which a woman can't. There has to be proper tzniut. The woman is a woman, a man is a man. And spiritual advisor. The woman, their problems, she's trained. She took courses, psychology, family counseling. Woman to woman, man to man. And I am jealous of Chabad, because Chabad has totally solved the problem. Shaluach, Shlucha. Recognize what I'm talking about? And I got to be honest with you. I know many Chabad couples. 60% of the time, the woman is more dominant and more of a spiritual personality than the man. Think about what I just said. Agree or disagree? Shlucha. They know their place. Shlucha. Shaluach. Shlucha. I can tell you in Yerushalayim, I try to get once a week to a place called Greg. Recognize the name in the Hadam wall. No one knows, you know why it's called Hadad? No one knows. When we came in Aliyah, that was the Hadad cookie factory. On Thursday, they took us from the absorption center. They used to sell all the broken cookies, cheap as could be. The smell of the cookies, the chocolate, for kilometers around, you could smell Hadad. Today, that factory is elsewhere, a modern factory. They knocked it all down. They built the Hadad Shai, so it's called Hadad. No one knows why. It was the Hadad cookie factory location. Second floor in the mall, there's a beautiful Milchiker restaurant, Greg's. You get a salad there, ladies, you have what to dig into. And it's less than American, take my word for it. Baruch Hashem, priceless, food much better. So if you come Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock, they take a whole bunch of tables, put them together, and the Chabadnikit, who was raised in Connecticut, who she and her husband opened the Chabad house in Baca, gives his shir on Tanakh. Her name is Nechamadina Hendel. It's a married name, Hendel. To hear that lady teach, it is sweet as sugar. Totally normal. No messianicism. Quotes the Rebbe like I would quote the Rav. But what a beautiful expression. See, in Israel, the women are right on top of the ballpark. See, you take Keichel Shlomo, Sivan Meir. Have you heard the name? Make believe you have, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Sivan Meir. Semi-Haredit. She's a Balat Shuvah, but a Balat from a genius. She graduated high school at 14, college at 16, became frum at 15, did the army, a radio personality. Wednesday night, she lectures on Parshat HaShavua. 600 people standing room only. It's a sight to see. See, expression of women, but within the halachic context. Okay. Let me go one step further. I was told 10 to 3:30, but can I have another 3 minutes? With a beautiful document I'm going to show you. You all know that it should be on YU Torah. Now I lectured on it two nights ago, right? The night before last. I lectured on the Rav's journey from Agudat Yisrael to Mizrahi. And you talk about his respect for women. The Rav's greatest moment in life, in my humble opinion, was the talk he gave on the 8th anniversary of the State of Israel in 1956, out of which was published the essay, Kol Dodi Dofek. I trust you're all familiar with it. There are two English translations. There's a French translation. My wife and I are responsible for a Russian translation. So if you don't read the original Hebrew, there may even be a Yiddish. He spoke in Yiddish, but the manuscript was in Hebrew. But I believe David Fishman may have put it out in Yiddish. Professor at, his son was my dear student at Bruce. He's professor at JTS. And this essay, God is knocking on our door, come an aliyah. And then there was the Six-Day War. And students, maybe your age, in Give Up Washington, a school at that time for the training of teachers, a religious Zionist school. Today it's much more than just teachers. And the students had a teacher, Rebbetzin Miriam Shiloh, the Rebbetzin of Kedumen. And she wrote to the Rav, an unknown woman, the Rav didn't know her. Wrote to the Rav, forgive me, I'm hesitant, who am I to speak to the Gadol Hadar, but my students want to know why you didn't come in Aliyah, the man who wrote Kol Dodi Dofek. And the Rav wrote an answer. This is the Rav's handwriting. This is his stationery. Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. No titles. This is his handwriting. This is his signature, Yosef Dov. You gotta be an expert. Took me, Baruch Hashem, after many years of correspondence with the Rav and research on my original work on Revo, Rabbi Revo, I learned how to read the Rav's handwriting. So this was sent to me when Miriam Shiloh was quite ill. She died shortly thereafter. And it was sent to me by her husband, because he knew I was publishing on Rav Soloveitchik. If I could publicize it, this is the letter in that I figured out exactly what the Rav was saying. But when you read that letter, he apologizes and he says, you're absolutely right. And he says, I really was thinking of Aliyah, but I'm in such deep mourning. His wife had just died. And you see the love for his wife, the description. And you all know he never got over the death of his wife, just as the Lubavitcher Rebbe never got over the death of his wife. I trust you're familiar with all this. And then at the end of the letter he writes, but you need not apologize and say you're a simple Jewish. I'm also a simple Jew. And we're both doing the same thing. He says to this woman, he says, you're teaching in Givat Washington, and I'm teaching in Yeshiva University in New York City. But we're both teaching Torah. And that is the most important aspect of life. This letter appears in the original Hebrew and in English translation, I'll tell you exactly where. Torah Torah Foundation of Alon Shvut, Haretzion, put out a volume edited by my student Nanny Naftali Helfgott of the Rav's correspondence. This letter with the green cover, you can't use everyone else the book. This letter is an English translation in the book. Later, Hebrew translation came out, but the original Hebrew, this didn't need translation into Hebrew, here it is. So I want to reiterate, first of all, I want to thank you for coming out. Club Hour, when I look back to Yeshiva College, some of my greatest moments of spiritual development took place during Club Hour. I speak about the Mashkiach, Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson, and I met him during Club Hour, and if you're interested further, it's all on YUTorah.org. The Rav is a seminal figure. You have no idea who this man was, how blessed we are. It's his 25th judge site. I'm doing a little to help people understand who he was. As I said, this is the seventh different lecture. I have three more, Bezrat Hashem, and then back home to my native habitat. But this was the Rav, and he gave us the ability to live as a Jew and yet walk freely in the big Western world. We never felt there was a dichotomy, a conflict. We knew what we could do, we knew what we could accept, and we knew what we had to reject. At times it was not common sense that guided us, but Torah and tradition. And Baruch Hashem, I need not tell you, Yeshiva University today, Toru Mata, and everything the Yeshiva has attempted to do, and to a great degree, very successfully, is a total reflection of the Rav's understanding. May you go Michael El Chayil, and whether it's the title spiritual advisor, if that is your interest, or Shlucha, if that is your interest, may you be Zochat Lahadil Torah Ulahadira. And I end off every class, till we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. And you better read Washington to find out why the Das Vedanya. And if you say, Rakefet, who can believe these stories, then read the book the Mossad put out, Benitiv Hadamama, Mekhar Shazah, and the two stars in the book, we didn't even know, but it's nice to know not only the Ribbono Shel Olam appreciates your work, but even the Mossad. Is a young lady from the Bronx named Malka, and a young man from the Bronx named Aaron. Two of you together in health and happiness. That's spectacular. All best regards home. And tell your father he made me very happy with the good news about the wedding. It made my wife equally very happy. Beautiful. Okay, so that's the recording. And you'll give it to Rachel, she'll know what to do.